How is that leadership, Conor Murphy? Part of leadership is understanding how you can keep, you know, in this situation, the DUP as a party to work with you. Issuing ultimatums is clearly not going to work.
Well, I think the DUP must consider the unionist community fools if they think by banging the drum in relation to the British Army in the dock that people will forget about Red Sky and NAMA and RHI. Martin McGuinness said, yes, the DUP are still in a bubble over this, and I think Gregory's contribution confirms that they have blocked any effective investigation into this by the refusal to recognise a conflict of interest. They came forward with a smokescreen in relation to a recovery plan, which was more about trying to throw shapes at some sort of action to deflect the public anger in relation to this. And they have yet to contribute in any meaningful way to resolving these issues. So in those set of circumstances, you're left with a situation that you try and plough on against the widespread public view that this thing isn't working and it needs to be resolved and there's a crisis of confidence in relation to the institution.
So what do you go back
to try and say, give the people an opportunity to express their view on it and then ensure that the principles, and those principles are enshrined in law in the 1998 Act. It's not just a question of...
So what do you then do, Conor Murphy?
Ensure that those principles are the basis on which any power-sharing executive operates.
So what do you then do if there is an election? If the DUP is returned with a similar mandate? If Sinn Féin continues to be the biggest nationalist party? What do you then do? You go back into a power-sharing arrangement, fresh start, yet another one, with the DUP.
No,
that's what you will do.
No, we have said quite clearly there are principles at stake here and principles enshrined in law in relation to the Good Friday Agreement. And if people, including ourselves, if people aren't able to live up to the power-sharing requirements, the issues of propriety in government that are part of our institution, then there won't be an institution.
Okay, but I need to walk through this with you because it's very, very important. So, because there's no point having an election if people aren't aware what the outcome of that election will be. So are you saying that after an election, if, which is a very credible situation, if the DUP is elected as the biggest party, unionist party in Northern Ireland, if Sinn Féin is elected as the biggest nationalist party, are you saying that unless you get movement on, for example, equality rights, on, for example, LGBT rights, Irish language as well, are you saying you will refuse to go into government with the DUP?
We're saying that respect, equality, parity of esteem, propriety in government are all the founding principles of the Good Friday Agreement that are enshrined in law. And that is a basic requirement for any power sharing administration.
You just said yes there.
Sorry, then we would have no credibility whatsoever in going into a government which can't meet those standards.
But you've been in a government where you haven't got your way with LGBT rights. What's changed now?
Stephen, I bring you back to this point. It's not our way. It's the way of the Good Friday Agreement. It's the way that is enshrined in law.
There's nothing in the Good Friday Agreement that says... There is nothing.
We have tried in the last 10 years in the executive, with some success across a range of issues, to make these things work, and there are other issues that haven't been successful. And this is brought to a head by allegations of impropriety at the heart of government, and those need to be resolved because any government, any executive needs to have confidence, and your show, more than any other, has heard from the public over the last while in relation to a lack of confidence in how the institution is operating. So we have to
If
we are to have a credible, power-sharing institution, then it has to be very clearly on the basis of those principles which are enshrined in law.
But this goes beyond that. This goes beyond any reassurance to the public of propriety. You are introducing red lines around Irish language, around equality, around LGBT rights. How arrogant is Sinn Féin to say that unless they get their way, they will not budge, they will not go into government? That's not what power sharing is about. Power sharing is about working out how you can work together with another political party in Northern Ireland, given the differences that you have.
Well,
that's what you've done all along.
Let me bring you back again. The DUP and ourselves and the other parties in the Assembly enjoy our position there as a consequence of the Good Friday Agreement, which was voted for by the people of Ireland and enshrined in law, and has co-guarantors as both the British and Irish governments, who have to stand over the principles of equality and respect and human rights. And that's the basis on which that institution operates. Now, it's not a matter of Sinn Féin's way or any arrogance. We certainly have not. Martin McGuinness has been the absolute opposite of displaying any arrogance in relation to these matters. And we've been criticising our own community for being too accommodating of the DUP's arrogance. But that is the basis on which a government is formed. And if people cannot adhere to those principles which are enshrined in the Good Friday Agreement, then the party or an institution doesn't have any credibility because it's not based on what the people voted for in the 1998 referendum across the island of Ireland.
OK. Will Martin McGuinness lead your party into an election?
I certainly hope so. That will be a call for Martin. He was asked that question yesterday. He said he would consider that. He was dealing with the issue of his resignation yesterday. I know it's quite obvious for people who saw him on TV yesterday that he is not in good health at the moment, but we sincerely hope that he makes a very quick recovery and that he does lead us into that election.
Are you a potential replacement for Martin McGuinness?
That question doesn't even arise, nor won't arise, until such times as Martin McGuinness decides what he's going to do himself. And then the party, as we often do, will decide in relation to those matters.
OK, final word to you, Gregory Campbell. Is there any olive branch you can hand this morning to the people of Northern Ireland to give them hope that you at least understand the anger that there absolutely is in the community as to what has happened over the recent months?
Well, Stephen, I hope people that have listened to your programme over the matter of the last 30 minutes or thereabouts will see where the problem lies. We're not saying that it's only on terms that are acceptable to us. We're not saying that, but Sinn Féin said that yesterday. We aren't saying, and we could say, Sinn Féin only get into government if we decide. We haven't said that, even though that's a factual position. But that's what Gerry Adams said at the weekend. So, you know, there does appear to be a stepping up by Sinn Féin. If that's the way they wish to play it, then it does make things more difficult. But we're not going to walk away or roll over. Sinn Féin appeared to be saying with this list of demands now that they would prefer to work with unionists who would be more amicably disposed towards their agenda. That's what they appear to be saying, because they're saying the DUP don't fit the bill because they won't accept X, they won't accept Y, they won't accept Z. Now, they're going to have to realise that that's the real world. That is the real world. Now, I know they used, and they got used over a long period of time.
What happened to you being partners in government? What happened to this fresh start where people like me were being lambasted because I was trying to point out where you may disagree and you weren't going to disagree anymore? What happened to all of this?
Well, Stephen, I've made it clear in the course of the last 30 minutes that we need to try and resolve these issues. And we are, I'll repeat it again for the fourth or fifth time, that's what we are dedicated to.
It's pretty petty taking 50 grand out of the Irish language, wasn't it?
Well, you know, if we want to get into the disparity of treatment historically between the Irish and Ulster Scots, I'm open for that. I'm open for that. Because there's only one outcome if you dedicate yourself to parity of esteem. There's only one outcome going to be a result of that. So, you know, if I were Sinn Féin, I wouldn't push at that door too much because it might actually swing open.
Let me ask you, Gregory, and our number this morning, 030-30-80-55-55, obviously, big platform for you this morning, the public in Northern Ireland, to give us your view on what you've heard from the DUP and Sinn Féin. There's a practical issue, Gregory. You're the biggest party in Northern Ireland. Arlene Foster's the First Minister, the leader, might I say, of this country. What actually happens practically? Stormont hasn't agreed a 17-18 budget. It needs to have one in place by the 29th of March. So what happens if that doesn't happen? How do we function in Northern Ireland?
Well, the other departments will continue as per normal, and the Secretary of State will look at what the regulations allow him to do. Again, you know, a budget would have had to have been agreed and would have been agreed, but because of the action yesterday, now can't be agreed. And if Sinn Féin stick to that, then it won't be agreed, not by the Assembly, but the Secretary.
Are we looking at direct rule? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't think we're looking at direct rule, but we're looking at the NIO having to keep their hands on the tiller. Now, I don't know. Some people
that could mean interesting changes for welfare reform, couldn't it?
Well, it could, and we worked long and hard to try and devise a bespoke system for Northern Ireland. And there were some people who said it wouldn't come about, couldn't come about, would never come about. And we eventually got there. And you know the reason we got there, Stephen? Because people kept working at it. They kept working, all of us kept our shoulder to the wheel to get a resolution. Now, we should learn the lesson from that.
Okay. Here's my final question to you. Just in case there is an election, it's certainly looking likely, Gregory, isn't it? Do you, as a political party, apologise to the public of Northern Ireland for what happened with the RHI scheme?
I think the RHI scheme was very badly handled.
Does your party apologise for the part you played in it?
I think Arlene Foster has issued apologies on a number of occasions.
I'm wondering if we're going to hear it from you. Does your party apologise for what happened under your watch in the RHI scheme?
Well, I think it has been repeated on a number of occasions, Stephen, that it could have been done better. Unfortunately, none of those who are lambasting and complaining and protesting now made any suggestions about how it could be done better.
Is that what the public get this morning? When they're deciding what way to vote in the next election, what they're hearing from your party this morning, it could have been done better.
I know,
a £490 million projected overspend, and your summary, summary is it could have been done better. Are you prepared to say to the public this morning, as they decipher which way they may vote in the future, are you prepared to say we are sorry for what happened under our watch?
Look, Arlene has made her position clear on
what are your words?
You are
a senior member of the DUP.
Yes, Stephen,
are you prepared to say we are sorry for what happened?
Stephen, the scheme was very badly implemented. Very badly implemented. We are now taking our responsibilities seriously enough.
You're not prepared to say it, are you?
Well, what we're prepared to but to do is to try and resolve it. Which would you prefer? Would you prefer someone saying, I'm sorry what went wrong, but I'm not prepared to do anything to try and resolve
it? What's wrong with doing both?
Well, I think Arlene Foster has done both.
Who's
the First Minister, Stephen?
I'm asking you. Are you prepared? You're here on behalf of the DUP this morning. We're getting very close to a potential election. Are the public going to hear the words from you today, we are sorry for what happened under our watch?
Stephen, what you're trying to do is to try and project that it was the fault of Arlene Foster and the DUP alone for what happened on the RHI scheme. I've said to you now on about six occasions today previously.
I haven't said it was your fault alone. I haven't expressed an opinion. For the part that the DUP played. In other words, your minister was in charge of the scheme. The next minister, that was Arlene Foster, when the scheme was set up, when no caps were put in place. Jonathan Bell.
Look, you say there was no caps put in place. Was there any recommendation anywhere that there should be?
Yes.
No, there wasn't.
There were.
Not from consultants,
Gregory, I've had every file put in front of me associated with this scheme. I was reading them. There were warnings about the scheme. There were suggestions about the scheme. Ofgem was still fixated. Well, you asked me a question I'm answering it.
Yes, I did.
So the answer to your question is yes, there were warnings, there were suggestions to put caps in place, and it didn't happen under the DUP's watch.
There was no recommendation, none to any minister, certainly none to the First Minister, the now First Minister, then the Economy Minister. They weren't there, they weren't forthcoming. But none of that resolves the problem, Stephen. The problem is that we have a scheme now which is currently being implemented, which I and others have repeatedly said was a badly implemented scheme.
Are you prepared to say sorry?
We are prepared to try and resolve the problem. Arlene Foster has already apologised, has already had discussions with a number of ministers to try and resolve the problem. Now, people can say, well, do we get the problem resolved, or do we argue about who was or wasn't responsible?
When
we want a public investigation, an inquiry into what went wrong.
When
and,
I... Okay, and then that, in terms of that inquiry, hold on a second. In terms of that inquiry, when I sat in front of Arlene Foster in Stormont Castle, and I asked her, after it was publicised that we were losing all of this money, this projected overspend is a damning indictment on the lack of control in that scheme. When I asked Arlene Foster, had she asked the question why there was a delay in implementing the cost controls, she said she hadn't even asked the question. Do you now know why there was a delay? Have you asked the question? Has your party asked the question? And what is the answer?
Well, Stephen, you've repeated on a number of occasions in the course of this interview the terminology that I think is much more accurate than terminology you used a few weeks ago, the projected overspend. That is better terminology than you used a few weeks ago.
Let's not lose sight of my question. Has your party got anything to tell the public as to why the cost controls were not put into the scheme in September, October, November of 2016? Could you please tell me why?
Do you know
the answer yet?
I don't think you want me to remind people that you outrageously and inaccurately said that 400 million had gone up in smoke.
I think I want to remind people that you might be engaged in a distraction tactic because of my question.
That is accurate.
Given the fact that Arlene Foster had not asked even the question as to why there was a delay in that September, October, November crucial period in implementing a cost control, have you subsequently asked it, and what is the answer?
Stephen, you're still fixated on trying to rewrite what happened and rehearse.
I'm asking, have you asked on behalf of the public what delayed? We now know that there was a suggestion to put the cost controls in September, and that was then delayed for 6 weeks. Why? Who delayed it?
Who was responsible? Stephen, the point here
Have you asked? Has the First Minister asked?
In January 2017, people want to know, are we going to fix the problem?
You might say
this programme will be asking on behalf of the public
in Northern Ireland,
yes,
not just what are you going to do about it, but who was responsible for it going wrong,
and why did it go wrong?
Why did it go wrong, Gregory?
As you put it previously, you're going to keep digging. And as I responded, digging works both ways.
I think people responded to you in that they were asking you, were you threatening me?
And what way would you suggest that that's a threat?
I'm telling you, that's what people sent to you. You can dig away into me, Gregory.
Why would you suggest that?
You can dig away into me.
I'm telling you now
that you dig away as much as makes your heart content. I will continue to ask the questions I'm asking.
Well, Stephen,
let's come back to the issue.
Stephen, here's the point here. You see, you are very good at posing questions.
I've said this on a number of occasions.
Yes, that's right. That is right, for which you're very highly and secretively paid out of the public purse. Yes.
Thank you.
Now, the point is, you're not very good at answering them. That's the point. That's the digging I'm talking about.
Okay, and dig away. So if I can come back, if you don't mind, to the question, and then I'll thank you very much for your time today, sir. Has your party got anything to tell the public as to why the cost control was not put in September? Why was it delayed? Has Arlene Foster, or indeed your party, asked that question and got anything to reveal to the public at this stage before an election?
Well, I would have thought that an inquiry or a public investigation, which would have been set up, possibly would have been sitting within a week or two, would have been asking those questions. And we would have been very, very content to abide by the outcome. Very content. And that would have been an independent judicial-led investigation,
sure,
which could have posed those questions.
Sure, but of course,
we would have abided by the outcome.
My question is not, should the public rely on an inquiry to get the evidence? My question is specific. Has the DUP asked and has an answer? Do you know why there was a delay?
I don't know, Stephen. I'm not a minister, and I wasn't in executive office at the time. But the relevant point is this, Stephen. What are politics? I mean, you seem to be fixated on this one issue. Which is, I suppose, is a change from being fixated on one or two other issues that you've engaged in. But people are now saying, look, we had an announcement yesterday. We're going to be plunged into an electoral process. Now, Sinn Féin have made a series of demands, and they have said, this is what we demand. This is what we want. It's our way or no way. Now, people are going to have to make up their mind who they want to respond to that. While we try and fix the problem, not walk away from it, but fix it, work through it, and get it resolved. That's what people want to see.
Okay, and I really appreciate your time today, sir. Thank you very much indeed. That's Gregory Campbell from the DUP, Conor Murphy from Sinn Féin.